Judge Anderson will be right back.
Thank you for indulging me. The arguments in the last case were so interesting, I got hot with the sweater on.
Call the case of Rhodes versus Lazy Flamingo 2, Inc. Mr. Merritt.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. Your Honors, we are here because in a negligence per se trial, the court allowed the jury to determine the standard of care. In July 2012, Vincent Rhodes brought his wife Diana to Florida for a final fling before he received a liver transplant. At the Lazy Flamingo, Mr. Rhodes ate raw oysters infected with a bacterium called Vibrio vulnificus, and as a result, was hospitalized for 5 days, three of them in intensive care. Vibrio is so dangerous to people with liver disease that Florida's administrative code requires a specific warning in restaurants serving raw oysters. Rule 64D-3.040, subsection 8 of the administrative code requires those restaurants to display, quote, either on menus or on table placards, the following notice. Consumer information. There is risk associated with consuming raw oysters. If you have chronic illness of the liver, stomach, or blood, or have immune disorders, you are at greater risk of serious illness from raw oysters and should eat oysters fully cooked. If unsure of your risk, consult a physician. Both of the district court judges who presided below determined that this rule establishes the standard of care for the sale of raw oysters in restaurants. The jury instructions distributed to the jurors at the beginning of the case cited this rule as the standard of care. Now, during the trial, it was discovered that Lazy Flamingo had a Vibrio warning posted on the wall of the restaurant and a different warning on its menus. However, Lazy Flamingo never claimed or adduced any evidence that it had given the warning required by the rule on menus or table placards.
Let me ask you a clarifying question. There's another regulation called Sanitation Safety Requirements, which is section 61C 4.0108. It's my understanding that regulation went into effect after Mr. Rhodes ate at the Lazy Flamingo. Is that right?
I believe it is a subsequent rule. In any event, the applicable rule was litigated during the pretrial process, and it was determined that 64D 3.040 sub 8 was the governing rule.
Okay, and the other regulation seems a little bit inconsistent insofar as where the notice is, but that's not an issue here. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Lazy Flamingo introduced an industry bulletin, a circular distributed by the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation. This bulletin said that the required warning could be displayed on menus or table placards as required by the rule, but also said it could be displayed on the wall. That bulletin was an incorrect statement of the rule regarding Vibrio warnings, which had been adopted by the court as the standard of care. The bulletin itself was not a law or a rule. The original jury instruction recited the rule's requirement that the warning be placed on menus or table placards and said, quote, violation of this administrative rule is negligence. If you find that defendant Lazy Flamingo Restaurant violated this rule, then defendant Lazy Flamingo was negligent. After the evidence closed, the trial court sua sponte added this language. You may also consider the industry bulletin for Florida's seafood industry dated July 11, 2011. If you find the defendant violated this regulation, then the defendant was negligent. The Rhodeses timely objected to the new instruction.
Did you object when the bulletin was introduced into evidence?
The record is not, no, ma'am. There was not an objection to its introduction into evidence.
Does that affect our analysis at all?
And if no, ma'am. Why not? And if not, as I will address later on, but I can address now, is that we're dealing with whether the standard of care to be applied by the jury was a question of law or a question of fact. The rule was an exhibit in evidence. It was never adopted by the court or accepted by the court in any of the pretrial litigation or in any of the litigation as the law establishing the standard of care for Lazy Flamingo. It was simply a commentary on the rule distributed as a circular by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation.
Is that the same department that monitors and enforces 64D-3.0408, in other words, the regulation applicable here? Was that the same department that enforces that law?
I can tell you honestly, I do not know.
And the record doesn't even show that?
I don't believe it does.
And there was no argument or evidence in this case that the department that is responsible for enforcing and interpreting 64D, the regulation at issue here, no evidence or argument that the department that is responsible for that regulation issued the bulletin and or was establishing that bulletin as a reasonable interpretation of the regulation?
I do not believe that that issue was argued.
And is there any evidence in the record to the effect that that bulletin was supposed to be a reasonable interpretation of the regulation?
What we know about the bulletin is simply this, that it was promulgated by the Department of Business and Professional Regulation on July 11, 2011, to the seafood industry restaurants I believe it was distributed by the health inspectors.
But we don't know whether it was promulgated by the department responsible for interpreting the regulations or enforcing it.
I do not know, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, the language added to sua sponte to the jury instruction was, you may also consider the industry bulletin.
With regard to the bulletin, that was a plaintiff's exhibit? You marked it as plaintiff's exhibit, what number?
It was, I believe it was marked as A. It was used as a demonstrative aid in direct examination of a witness.
By the plaintiff's counsel?
By the plaintiff, and
were
then...
You the counsel?
I was not with that witness, but I was trial counsel.
Okay. I'm just trying to see how it got injected in the case.
It was then offered into evidence by the defense, as I can best understand the record, having been there and having read it. It appears to have been offered by the defense during cross, and there was no objection raised to the untimeliness.
Okay. And so the bulletin got into evidence.
Yes, ma'am.
And I was confused whether, because you had it initially using it to cross-examine the witness.
Used it on direct of the witness.
Direct. And ask him about some of the content, right?
Some part of the precatory language in the bulletin.
Okay, so you got into the content of the document with the witness.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and then the defense used it on cross.
And introduced it, yes, ma'am.
And did the defense say, I hereby introduce it, or did the defense say, since the plaintiff used it, I think it should go into evidence, or how did that come about?
Basically, I think the trial court may have asked if it was in evidence. The defense said, I'm not sure, but I have no objection. We didn't object to it. The plaintiff didn't object to it, and it ended
up. Whoever offered it, it got into evidence with no objection by the plaintiff.
I believe that is correct.
Because to me, if this case... that bulletin had never come in, they wouldn't have had the bulletin, you see. So now it's in evidence, and then what happens?
Then what happens is the crisis that brings us here. The jury is confused by this additional instruction that they may consider not only Rule 64D 3.040 sub 8, I hope I said that right, but may consider the bulletin as well. This is added to the jury instruction. Clearly the jury was confused by the insertion of this new element.
And you objected to that?
Yes, Your Honor. Their first question.
While we're on that point, the jury charge went out to the jury in writing, correct?
Went out before the trial started, was then amended, and went out at the time that the court instructed them.
As I understand it, the code regulation that just refers to menus and table placards. That was quoted verbatim in the jury charge.
Yes, ma'am.
So they had that out, too.
Yes, ma'am.
And then if the bulletin is in evidence, why can it not be considered?
This is exactly the thrust of the appeal. It cannot be considered because the rule is there as the standard of care, which is a question of law. The bulletin is a mere exhibit on whatever issue of fact it may pertain to. The standard of care is determined by the court as a matter of law. You cannot conflate law and evidence because any item of evidence may be discarded and disregarded by the jury, but they must accept the law determined by the court, which in this case was the rule, not the bulletin, and there's a zero.
Why couldn't that go to whether the defendant acted negligently here because he got this subsequent bulletin? And we look at the overall case. Why couldn't they consider it in deciding whether the defendant was negligent?
Because as a result of pretrial litigation, the case had been narrowed down to a single count of negligence per se for violation of a police powers regulation to the harm of a person within the protected class.
Okay. So you're saying you had to have strict compliance with the code and the bulletin means nothing?
Correct. Violation of the code is negligence per se under the pretrial rulings of the court.
So could they consider it on proximate cause?
They could consider it like any evidence for whatever weight they might give it. My personal opinion is that it's not relevant to any issue before the court. But remember, please, that the jury never got to the question of causation. This was a no-negligence case in a per se negligence action or a no-negligence verdict in a per se negligence.
Maybe the answer is you should have had a directed verdict. Did you move for directed verdict on negligence?
Yes, ma'am.
And said don't submit anything but damages to the jury?
Yes, ma'am.
And what did the district trial court do?
Allowed it to go to the jury.
Uh-huh. And did you appeal that ruling going to the jury? I'm talking about failure to grant summary judgment as a matter of law.
No, ma'am.
As a matter of law.
No, ma'am.
Okay. That's part of the problem here. If you're going to have a negligent per se case. I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Tried to help me.
You saved 5 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Merritt.
Thank you.
May I please, court? The question of compliance or non-compliance with this code was really the question that went to this jury. And the question of compliance or non-compliance is, matter of fact, supported, the non-compliance verdict that the jury arrived at was supported by five different pieces of evidence that came in. Confusion that is characterized, we would submit, is not a confusion between the bulletin and between the code. It's a question of compliance or non-compliance. As the court is aware, in the course of the case, we tended to refer to the industry bulletin as the Bible, and we did so simply because, as the court is familiar with religious scriptures, they are always subject to interpretation, as are our administrative codes and our laws very often. That's why we have so many disagreements about it. There are five pieces of evidence that made it very clear that supported the jury's verdict that there was, in fact, compliance. The primary two pieces of evidence were two health inspector officials who testified, one for the county, one for the state of Florida, that investigated this particular incident and found the defendant to be in total compliance with the administrative code. So we do have a matter of interpretation. The interpretation and application of 64D by both the health department officials, inspectors, and the county. So we have two witnesses that were responsible for the interpretation, application, and enforcement of 64D who found the restaurant to be in compliance. One of those two individuals, as a matter of fact, was the very inspector who would regularly inspect this restaurant prior to the incident in question, and found at all times that the restaurant was in compliance with the signage and the ordinance and the codes. And in fact, the testimony and evidence in the case demonstrated that these signs are not signs that the restaurants make up and put up. These are signs that are actually issued by the state of Florida. There's an official date of issuance and that type of thing for the posting. So the restaurant, you can imagine, particularly seafood restaurants in the state of Florida, of which there are many, do not have the capacity to interpret and apply the administrative code to a large extent, and this was brought out by part of the plaintiff's own expert, Gary Roderick, that the interpretation, application, and enforcement of the many, many, many rules governing restaurants, and particularly seafood restaurants, those restaurants rely at least in part on the detailed interpretation, application, and enforcement of the health officials. And in fact, the testimony and evidence was that they were at all times in compliance with the state codes and requirements. In fact, the plaintiff's own expert, and we cited to it in our brief, the plaintiff's own expert, Gary Roderick, alluded to the fact that often the inspectors and enforcers of the administrative code will find compliance where maybe there isn't a technical compliance, but in fact they will interpret it and apply it in a manner which is consistent with their interpretation and enforcement and the application of it from a practical standpoint. So first of all, we have two health officials. We have the plaintiff's expert, who concedes that by virtue of the fact that the signage was visible, the correct and accurate signage was visible in the restaurant, that there was compliance.
I think, did he not, the plaintiff's expert said that a restaurant might comply with the bulletin, but he did not say compliance with the bulletin was compliance with the regulation 64D, did he?
No, he did not. And,
that's what I thought.
You're correct, Judge Anderson. It was it's the interpretation and the application and the practical application of it. Here, in this case, there seemed to be a focus on the question of a table placard, the requirement of a table placard. And of course, we did not get to that question of proximate causation, but it was...
Let me tell you what bothers me about your case. Is it seems to me the initial instruction, you may well have ample evidence, and you've been talking about the evidence that would support the verdict, but the problem is the instructions as clarified by the district court's answers to the jury's questions. And the jury question clearly posed the issue is what is the relative weight with respect to the standard of care to be given to the regulation 64D as opposed to the bulletin. And the district court, in effect, punted and said you can consider them both. And it seems to me that that is error because the regulation is clearly the superior, at very least. If the department charged with enforcing and interpreting the regulations had issued the bulletin as a reasonable interpretation of the regulation, then we might be faced with an issue of whether that departure from the language of the regulation is reasonable or not. But we don't even have to get that far because, as I see it, there's no evidence in the record and no argument even below. I've looked at the record below and certainly no argument by you on appeal that the bulletin is a reasonable interpretation of the regulation promulgated by a department which has authority and to interpret the regulation to which deference should be made. So it seems to me we have to send this case back for a new trial. What's wrong with my thinking?
Well, Your Honor, the court specifically, and we allude to this fact, understand that we're dealing with a senior judge, a senior trial judge that has had...
I'm a senior judge, too, and we're supposed to do things just as well as the active judges.
Absolutely. A significant experience in charging juries. And, of course, in fact, they have broad discretion in the phraseology and formulating the instruction to the jury, as the court is familiar, as long as the charge is accurate.
But he can't tell the jury the wrong standard of care, can he?
And what he told them, as a matter of fact, and we quoted this from the record, Your Honor, in our brief, he instructed them that they must consider all the evidence in the case. And he said specifically, I don't mean that you must accept all the evidence as true or correct, but you must consider it. In fact, if he had specifically said, well, I'm going to tell you what evidence is better than the other evidence, or you've got to give this evidence more weight than that evidence, or this witness more credibility than another witness, that would be a slippery slope for any judge, and it would certainly be raise the ante for a jury to difficult to say, okay, well, how much more weight? Is it that much more weight, or is it that much more weight? In fact, Judge Magnuson was very specific in instructing, and correctly, that you have to consider all the evidence. And as was brought out by Judge Hull, this was evidence. It was evidence that was not objected to. It was evidence which the jury considered and, in fact, had to consider and determine whether it was true or correct. When the court came back and they asked specifically the handwritten note, when did the administrative code become law that was provided? And that was the second question. And did the administrative code carry more or less weight than the industry bulletin? The court said, no, in fact, see the attached. The Florida Administrative Code is evidence. The Industry Bulletin for Florida Food Service Industry, dated July 11, 2011, is also evidence. You may consider both together with all the evidence in reaching your verdict. That, to do other than that, to instruct the jury to consider all of the evidence, which is the finder of the fact, to listen to the testimony of the evidence, including the two health inspectors, who said that they were in compliance, they were always in compliance as far as the health inspectors were considered, to do otherwise than that.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Haas. That second question that you referred to from the jury, does the administrative code carry more or less weight than the industry bulletin? It seems to me that that question is going to what the law is. And so evidence, which pertains to facts, would have nothing to do with what the law is.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So I don't understand your argument about the judge instructing that you consider this evidence or that evidence. It's a question of law what the standard of care is, which is based on what the law is. How could the jury consider the bulletin as evidence of what the law is?
That's the question that the jury asked was not a distinction. It said, does the administrative code carry more or less weight than the industry bulletin? The jury didn't say, and they weren't confused about what the law was. In fact, the court instructed them specifically that they had to consider 64D and that 64D was the only standard upon which the case was being tried. And the court told them that very specifically. There was no confusion. When the court instructed them on the law, the court never alluded to the fact that the bulletin was the law.
That's not quite true. In the instruction, the court did state and quote, it actually read out the 64D regulation, including the notice. But then the very next sentence, it says, you may also consider the industry bulletin, dated July 11, 2011. Seems to me that confused the jury as to what the standard of care was, especially when you couple that with the district court's responses to the jury question.
Well, but at no point did the court instruct the jury that they had to consider the industry bulletin, merely that they may consider the industry bulletin. Court never instructed them that the industry bulletin was the law or constituted the law. And that's the distinction.
Really, Really, should the bulletin have even come in evidence? If it's not a reasonable interpretation or an authorized interpretation of the code, it should have been in the case to begin with. It should have been excluded. What is the relevancy of the bulletin to the case?
Well, the relevancy of the bulletin to the case, of course, was brought up in the plaintiff's direct evidence and the direct testimony in it.
Right.
And it was brought up as the application of the historic standard by which the DPR had held restaurants in that serve seafood to a notification of patrons.
Seems like if it was an unauthorized reading of the code or not a reasonable interpretation of the code, we should have just tried, the case should have been tried just on the code.
Well, it was.
And you go to trial on the code.
It was.
Once the bulletin gets in evidence, then that's the problem.
It was a reasonable interpretation of what, in fact, was being enforced and applied on, as a practical measure by the public health officials. That's the way they read it. That's the way they enforced it. Now, whether it was correct or not.
You didn't argue that either in the district court or on appeal.
We did not, but that's the testimony and evidence from the, we didn't argue it, but that was the evidence of the two public officials that testified, and their reports were submitted in evidence. And I would point out that those reports from both of those officials, both the county official and the state health official, were also placed in evidence that exonerated the defendant totally.
I haven't read the closing, but did the plaintiff argue that the bulletin was not a reasonable interpretation and irrelevant?
I can't respond to that, Your Honor. I don't recall.
And I think the plaintiff did not, and you did not argue that the bulletin was a reasonable interpretation of the regulation.
I don't remember, but I do recall specifically that were multiple references in the court in the course of the case that it was the standard in the evidence, that we referred to it on multiple occasions. As a matter of fact, I referred to it on opening statement as the Bible by which the restaurants were held. So it was the interpretation that was applied by the public health officials and applied by our clients in their restaurant, and they were at all times told that they were in compliance. So I think the court's question might be a distinction without a difference. In fact, it was the standard. It was the standard that was applied, whether rightfully or wrongfully, but that was the standard to which our restaurant was held.
In your brief to us, you argue that the bulletin did not alter the regulation standard. And it seems absolutely clear to me it did. The regulation said the notice had to be on the menu or on the placard, and the bulletin said it could be there or elsewhere as long as it was in plain view.
We agree that it did not amend or supersede that, but it was the practical day-to-day application. Thank you.
It pleased the court. The district court, and this is, I think, a critical point, the district court did, of course, instruct the jury that it could accept or reject any and all evidence in whole or in part. The district court then instructed, in its answer to what was actually the second jury question, the first written jury question that we have, that Rule 64D-3.040(8) was evidence. Now, how long would it take to reverse a criminal case in which the trial judge said, now, ladies and gentlemen, 18 U.S.C. Section 922 is evidence in this firearms prosecution. You may consider it, give it the weight it deserves, accept it, or reject it. There was as much error in the court identifying the applicable rule as evidence as there was in the court identifying the bulletin as part of the standard of care. There was nothing to be interpreted here. Rule 64D, the one we've been citing, says either on menus or on table placards, the following notice must be posted, and then it has the words of the notice. The first jury question, which I think it's important to consider, was this. It's found at this court's docket number 194, page 169. The question was, quote, on page 8, instruction 64D-3.0408, has this been admitted into evidence? Can we consider this code as evidence, or may we only consider Industry Bulletin July 11, 2011? Now, the court answered that they could consider both, just as it did in the second question that we've discussed before. The trial court erred in telling the jury that the rule was evidence, a thing to be weighed and accepted or discarded like any other evidence. The rule was not evidence. It was the governing law as settled in the pretrial litigation. As things turned out, the jury was left to decide the standard of care, to choose between the bulletin and the rule. The result was that in a negligence per se case in which all evidence without exception showed that Lazy Flamingo failed to comply with the rule, the jury returned a verdict of no negligence.
If the case is retried, is the bulletin going to come in evidence, or are you going to object to it as irrelevant to anything in the case?
I shall vigorously object to its introduction.
Right. So it shouldn't even be in evidence according to your view of the case.
I don't see that. It could be under some factual scenario one might conjure relevant to something, but I don't see it as the case was tried. The error, though.
Why doesn't the error really stem from here that this bulletin got in evidence if it has no interpretive effect? It has no relevance to anything. If we got to go by the regulation, it can only be complied with if it's on the table or menu cards. Why do we get the bulletin in?
The error was not in the admission of irrelevant evidence. The error was in the treatment of evidence and law as being of equal dignity, of treating evidence and law as though they were to be considered identically by the jury. And ultimately, in giving, by placing Rule 64D and the bulletin both before the jury and saying you can look at both of them, telling the jury, you decide the standard of care. Well, we all learn among the first things that we learn as baby lawyers that issues of fact are for the jury, matters of law are reserved to the court. It was for the court to decide whether the rule or the bulletin, however the bulletin came in, whether the rule or the bulletin established the standard of care. And it had long since been established, and it is continues to be true as a matter of law that the standard of care is established by the rule.
And do you contend the bulletin is not a reasonable interpretation of the regulation?
It is not.
So you think it should have no legal effect?
I believe it is.
Followed, the industry puts it out, it's got no legal effect whatsoever.
In a negligence per se case, no ma'am, no legal effect whatsoever.
And did you argue that the bulletin was not a reasonable interpretation? Did you say that to the jury or anything like that?
My recollection and my brief review of the plaintiff's argument, and my time is out, is that I argued the case to the jury simply that the rule was what counted. The rule determined the verdict. The rule was the standard of care without making reference to the bulletin, is my best recollection. And I have looked at it as much as I could stand recently.
That's a great answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May we be excused.
Next case is Hollister Incorporated versus Zazzy Holdings.